Hi, everybody. Are you ready to take a stroll down memory lane? Got some great programs on tap for you here tonight. Tonight, we'll resume our stroll down memory lane and continue visiting with our crime fighters with a rather obscure series called Police Blotter. Police Blotter was originally broadcast over the ABC network from November 17, 1952 to January 23, 1953, with 5-minute episodes 5 times a week. Then, in 1956, Mutual picked it up and filled it out to a 30-minute once-a-week series, heard on Friday evenings from May 4, 1956 to October 4, 1957. There is no real information available other than the series starred Bill Zuckert as Sergeant Brad Peters. Tonight's show is titled Homicide by Hurricane, also known as Death at the Airport Wind Tunnel. Listed as Episode 6, this show was most likely broadcast on June 8, 1956.
Tonight, Police Blotter, starring Bill Zuckert as Sergeant Brad Peters.
Name?
Harry Dennis.
Address?
543 Larson Street.
Charge? Suspicion of murder.
The heritage that you and I share as Americans has been given to us by many great men. One of these was Patrick Henry. He was a very lazy youngster, preferring to hunt or fish rather than go to school. But as he grew older, he developed an interest in law. This, together with a marvelous gift for oratory, led to his becoming a famous lawyer, and later helped him serve several terms as governor of Virginia. In 1775, with the American Revolution at a critical stage, Patrick Henry made his famous speech, ending with the immortal words, "I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death." Patrick Henry's words have rung through the ages. They are part of your American heritage.
Police Blotter. Authentic dramas of police work and the constant battle that goes on night and day against crime. Homicide by Hurricane on Police Blotter.
I'm Brad Peters, Sergeant Homicide. Been inside a police station. Phone rings. It might be anything from disturbing the peace to murder. Whatever or whoever it is, rich or poor, innocent or guilty, sooner or later I get to know them all. ...9 a.m. Call came in from Jonas Airport on the bay side of the precinct. Small field for private planes. Man named Costa, working on experimental plane, was found dead in the wind tunnel.
I've been waiting for you. Where you been?
Just getting out here, Mr.
Dennis, Harry Dennis. I told Ben to stay away from that wind tunnel. Told him a dozen times if I told him once. But he had his own ideas.
That it up ahead in that hangar?
Yeah.
You're the one called the police?
Yeah, that's right. I got here at 8 this morning, same as usual. I waited for Ben and he didn't show up. I began to wonder. Finally, I looked in the wind tunnel.
Why there?
Because that's where I left him last night. Costa and I are working on an experimental plane, a flying platform kind of gadget.
Uh-huh.
We were making wind tunnel tests. But last night at midnight, I had had it. I told Ben the project was a flop and why throw good money after bad?
You were partners?
Up until last night.
How did the argument end?
What? What argument?
Dissolving a partnership usually means an argument.
Not with Ben and me. We've been friends for years. I just threw in the sponge, that's all. Look, why do you guys always figure there had to be an argument?
Yeah, it's just force of habit, Mr. Dennis. Never mind, let's see the body. I saw it, but there wasn't much to see. It was all chewed up. That's a tough way to die, huh?
Yeah. poor Ben. You see how a wind tunnel is, Sergeant? The air is sucked in through that opening at the far end.
Uh-huh.
These two giant propellers up here build up the airspeed. Over here, this is where we set up the airplane model. It's suspended on this platform. Wires are used to test stability, turbulence factors, and so on.
How did Costa get in here?
With that door. The same one we just used now. Only he couldn't have used it while the wind tunnel was in action.
The door locks?
Automatically, once power is on. That's what I don't understand.
What?
How it started. It can only be turned on from outside. Ben must have been in here working on the model. Then something went haywire with the wind tunnel controls. It started up, and there he was, caught in a wind stream of over 250, 300 miles per hour.
You sure the controls went haywire?
What else?
Well, I'll have the controls checked, Mr. Dennis. Maybe they're okay. In which case...
What are you getting at?
Murder. All anybody has to do is push that button. The controls were checked. They worked perfectly. At 10:30, the medical examiner reported on cause of death. Body battered by sledgehammer wind inside the tunnel. I went through the dead man's clothes, checked the possessions. I found a remnant of a typewritten letter. A few words. Must have money by Thursday next, or will file for... And that was all. I spent the next half hour questioning personnel at the airfoil.
Me? You're taking me in? What for, Sergeant?
Suspicion of murder, Mr. Dennis.
Oh, you're off your rocker. Why me?
You were the last one to see Costa alive.
Who says so?
Guard on duty last night at the field entrance.
Look, that's nothing. This field isn't well guarded. Sure, there's a fence, but the fence is broken in a dozen places. Anybody could have walked in.
And there's another reason. You said you didn't argue with Costa.
So?
You were heard arguing. Loud voices, threats.
I can explain all that.
You'll get your chance. Dennis was taken in, booked on suspicion of murder. 12:15 p.m., I went over to Costa's apartment, the 800 block Shoreham Street. Furniture was being moved out. I found a woman supervising. Dark hair, good-looking, well-dressed.
Who am I? Helen Costa, that's who I am.
Mrs. Ben Costa?
Not for any longer than I can help. And why shouldn't I take this furniture out? I paid for it, not Ben. He put every penny into that stupid invention. I'm sick of it, you understand? I told him over and over I couldn't go on this way.
You're divorcing him?
I told him that last night.
Last night? Where was this?
Well, it was at the... It was right here, Sergeant, here in this apartment.
What time was it?
Oh, 6:30.
You're certain of that?
No, I'm not certain. I was upset. I told him either he gave me back all the money I had poured into that invention or I'd file for divorce.
You put your own money into it?
Every cent I had.
Mrs. Costa, do you own a typewriter?
A typewriter?
Yeah.
Well, no.
How did you tell your husband? In writing?
No, I just told him, that's all. I spoke to him.
If you're contemplating divorce, you have a lawyer, haven't you?
Yes.
All right, what's his name?
William Jefferson.
William Jefferson. His address?
250 Court Avenue.
Court.
Excuse me.
Yeah, sure.
Hello. Yes, this is Helen. What? What? Oh, no. No. No, excuse me, I can't talk now. Sergeant, why didn't you tell me?
About your husband?
That's why you're here, isn't it? Why didn't you tell me?
Who did tell you, Mrs. Custer?
That was my lawyer, Bill Jefferson. Dead. And all the while I was having the furniture moved out. All the time.
Nobody can blame you if you didn't know.
Well, yes, but it's so ghoulish. Well, it was Dennis. Dennis, it must have been.
His partner?
Fine partner. He never put any money into it. All he was doing was fastening onto Ben like a leech. He always got paid. Even when Ben was starving, Dennis got paid. Is there anything else you want, Sergeant?
Not right now, Mrs. Custer.
I'd better have this furniture moved back. Oh, it's awful. That's what it is. It's just awful.
She was crying. It could have been grief. On the other hand, it could have been guilt. I got one of the neighbors to stay with her. I went over to Claude Avenue, called on Attorney Jefferson.
Yes, Sergeant, Mrs. Coster was going to file for divorce. Now, naturally, it's not necessary.
You knew Ben Coster yourself, Mr. Jefferson?
I met him once or twice.
Are you his lawyer?
Well, not recently. Wouldn't have been ethical to handle his wife's divorce and represent him at the same time, but I was representing him until about a month ago.
Why did you stop?
Money, Sergeant. He was delinquent in his bill.
Uh-huh. How much he owe you?
Over $5,000.
Uh-huh.
Most of that was for filing the patent on his invention. I had to do a patent search, draw up the usual legal documents. Very complicated.
You've seen his invention?
Yes, several times.
What do you think of it?
Well, I'm a lawyer, not an aeronautical expert, but I'd say it was worthless. Never got off the ground.
We talked a while longer. I got no further information. I went back to the office, put in a call at the government patent office in Washington. Yeah, that's right. Peters, homicide. We're investigating the murder of a man named Ben Coster. Yeah. I'd like information on a patent filed in his name in the aeronautical field. Uh-huh. Well, the other name on it may be Harry Dennis. Yeah. Well, get back to me as soon as you can, will you? Thanks. P.M. Got the information from the patent office. Only two names on the patent. Ben Coster, Harry Dennis. I held further conversation with Dennis in my office.
Now you know you can't hold me. I didn't have anything to do with it.
What happens to that invention with Coster dead?
The invention isn't any good. It's worthless.
Well, as surviving partner, do you get it?
Look, that happens to be my business.
How much money was invested in that invention?
All told?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I should say $60,000, $70,000.
What was your share?
That's my business, too.
You ever see this?
Must have money by Thursday next or we'll file for... Where's the list of them?
That's all.
It's not familiar to me. Whose is it?
We found it in the wind tunnel.
Must have been Ben's. I don't get it. What money?
I thought you might know. Did Coster borrow any money?
Not that I know of. He had some, I had some, and his wife. Say, this could be about a divorce. She was pretty mad about Ben using up all her money.
That's all you can tell me?
Yes, except that you've got no right to keep me here. I talked to my lawyer. He says you can't...
We can. For 24 hours. Now, one more question.
You can ask. I may not answer.
Who was Costa's lawyer for the past month?
Bill Jefferson.
Jefferson says no.
Oh, that's right, sure. A man named Hazel. John Hazel.
I thanked Dennis, then checked the phone book for Hazelton. Lawyer. The address, 2850 Mandrake. I went over there at once. Excuse me, miss.
Yes. Oh, yes, Sergeant.
I'd like to see Mr. Hazelton.
Well, he's very busy right now. Doesn't want to be disturbed, but if it's important...
It could be.
What's it about?
Murder.
Oh.
That got her. She disappeared at once. While I waited, I checked the typewriter. I found a sample in the wastebasket. Put it in my pocket. 5 minutes later, I was talking to Hazelton.
Yes, I heard about it. Terrible tragedy, terrible. Anything I can do at all, just call on me, Sergeant.
I am.
Not that I can give you much help. I've only known Coster a month.
And Dennis?
Same. Not very well in either case.
This invention, were affairs in a tangle?
Tangle? Sergeant, you've heard of the Gordian knot.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, this was worse. Well, just 2 days ago, I learned that Coster had borrowed $20,000 and was being threatened with a lawsuit.
$20,000?
Well, that's the figure he gave me.
Who did he borrow it from?
I don't know.
You're his lawyer and you don't know?
Well, I know that sounds odd, but it's not really. You see, he told me that on the phone 2 days ago, very much upset. Said he'd drop in and discuss it with me.
Mm-hmm. Well?
He died before he could. So all I know is there's someone around whom Coster owed $20,000. And there's one other point.
About the debt?
Yes, I shouldn't violate a client's confidence, but since Coster is dead, he kited the figure, Sergeant.
Kited the figure?
Well, that's what he told me. The original note was for $2,000.
He changed it to $20,000?
Yes.
That's criminal offense.
Yes, so I told him. He said he was desperate for money. He said his invention was close to becoming practical. He'd been testing out the bugs. He had blueprints of an improved model.
An improved model?
Well, that's what he said. Of course, I have no way of knowing whether that was true or not.
Where did Costa have his office?
Office?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the only office he had, as far as I know, was out at the airport.
I asked some further questions, but that was all he knew. I went back to the office, gave the lab the original typewritten sentence, gave them the sample from Hazleton's office. And I arranged for searches for other samples, from the other lawyer, Jefferson, from Dennis, from Mrs. Costa. She had denied having a typewriter, but in a murder case, a lot of people deny a lot of things. At 6 p.m., Dennis was sprung by his lawyer. Okay, Mr. Dennis, you're out on bail. Just don't leave town.
I have no intention of leaving town.
Any more thoughts?
About Ben?
Yeah.
I don't know why I should help you out.
Me, Mr. Dennis? Yourself. You're the suspect.
But I tell you... Okay. I guess you were just doing your job. Okay. Ben and I did have a quarrel.
Last night?
Yes, every day for the past week. Sergeant, did you know what that darn fool had done?
I'm listening.
He stole $18,000.
18?
He had taken a personal loan for $2,000. He hiked the value to $20,000. He told me all about it. He was worried sick. The lender had threatened criminal action.
You were involved?
I'm his partner. In a partnership, each is responsible.
Who gave him the loan, Dennis?
I don't know.
Your own partner and you don't know?
I told you no.
Well, if it was a personal loan...
Personal? You... It wasn't. He forged my name to it, too. Now, if there's nothing else...
Yeah, there is one more thing.
Yeah?
I hear that invention was close to success.
What? Where'd you hear that?
Is that true?
Don't you think I'd know if it was? It's not true, Sergeant. It can't be true. Unless...
Yep.
Ben worked there a lot, alone.
Without you?
Yeah. Many nights I knocked off at 5 or 6. He kept going. I never thought of that. A man who would alter a check and forge another signature, he might be completely unscrupulous.
Would that flying platform be worth anything?
Worth anything? Sergeant, if it worked, it would be worth millions. Millions!
The newspapers carried it in the late editions. Inventor murdered, on brink of great triumph. I checked the lab at 8:30. I was still working on the typewriter search. And then a call came in at 9 p.m. Peters, homicide. Right. How long ago? Check. Call was from plainclothesman Walker. He had Mrs. Costa under surveillance. She had gone to Jarvis Airport. I went out there, walked across the airport, till I came to the hangar that housed the wind tunnel. I entered through the big steel door. I could just feel that echo. And just then, the door beside me opened. I saw it was a man. I didn't recognize him. But a flashlight went on across the hangar from me. And then there were two figures. A man and a woman. I started to tiptoe across.
No! No!
Mrs. Costa! Mrs. Costa! There was nothing. There was no answer. And then something came flying through the air. And it hit the hangar wall instead of me.
Now look, you're wasting your time. There's been one murder already. You can't get away with another. Mrs. Costa! Mrs. Scott!
And then I heard it. I couldn't tell where it was. Hangar had echoes. Might have come from any direction. But somebody was dragging her. And I listened. And there was a door somewhere. Not an outside door. It sounded different. And then the same door again, closing. What other door was there? Front door on the hangar? The back door? What other? And another sound. And I listened. It was a hum. It started low. It seemed to vibrate through the hangar. The wind tunnel. And then I used the flashlight.
Wide open this time. Narrow beam, but strong. And I ran toward the wind tunnel. And beside the door leading into it, I saw the starting button. Just as I got there...
Oh. Hey, one side! Drop that leg! Look, you fool, whoever you are!
I'll never know.
He was big. He was bigger than I was, and he was frightened. He was desperate. He was tough to handle. But I finally handled him. My head was swimming. All I had was a match. First one went out, but the second one held. And I found the switch, and I cut it off. And I went into the wind tunnel. And that was like stepping into a hurricane. Wind sucked at me, and I fought it.
Mrs. Custer! Mrs. Custer!
Help!
All right, take it easy. Just keep talking. Keep talking.
Help!
All right, okay,
get me
easy.
Out. Get me out.
All right, easy now, easy.
The wind, the wind!
I know.
Get me out.
Look, stop it, stop it. Take it easy.
He took me
now listen, it's
me.
Dying down now. It's all right, Mrs. Custer. I helped her out of the wind tunnel. Her clothes were torn. She certainly needed another permanent. I found the hangar lights, switched them on. I sat her down, slipped handcuffs on the man I had knocked out. Okay, Mrs. Custer. It's William Jefferson, huh?
Yes.
He killed your husband?
Yes. He came here last night. Ben owed him money. A lot of money.
$20,000?
You knew about that?
Yeah, we knew. Another couple of hours, we'll have the proof.
Well, he was angry at Ben. Very angry.
Only because of the money?
Well, yes.
Nothing else, huh?
No, of course not. What else could there be?
She's lying, Sergeant. Why are you lying, Helen?
To your conscience, Jefferson, huh?
She came to me for a divorce. We were going to get married, Helen and me. That's funny.
Funny?
I'm a lawyer. I didn't want to wait for a divorce. I figured it'd be easier with Ben out of the way. An accident.
Accident?
Okay. No accident. I came here late last night. I sneaked through a break in the fence. I put him in the wind tunnel.
And you did the same to me.
I cut it out, Mrs. Custer.
You know why he wanted to kill me, too, don't you? Don't you, Sergeant?
Yeah, I can guess.
You don't have to guess, Sergeant. I got panicky, that's why. Helen knew what I'd done. I told her. Then I got panicky. She was the only witness. I told her to meet me here. I picked up that story in the newspapers as an excuse. That Custer had blueprints around, a new flying platform, a successful one worth millions.
You tried to kill me.
Yes, I didn't want to, but I had to. I had to keep your mouth shut. No, Sergeant, these handcuffs.
What about them?
Well, you don't need them now. I'm finished, I know that. Can't you take them off?
Sure. When you're sitting pretty behind bars. Name?
William Jefferson.
Address?
1304 Elmwood Place.
Charge? Murder. Remarks. Mrs. Costa turned state's evidence. Laboratory found the piece of letter had been typed on Jefferson's machine. Jefferson indicted and tried, found guilty. Executed for murder, first degree. Signed, Sergeant Brad Peters, homicide.
You have just heard Police Blotter, starring Bill Zuckert as Sergeant Brad Peters. The cast included Joseph Bolin, Elaine Rost, and Carl Frank. Tonight's drama, Homicide or Hurricane, was written by Sheldon Stark and directed by William Marshall.
Police Blotter has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
Now, let's take a look at a rather lighthearted crime-fighting duo based on the novels by Francis and Richard Lockridge, Mr. and Mrs. North. Broadcast from December 30th, 1942 to December 18th, 1946 over NBC and sponsored by Jergens and Woodbury. Then from July 1st, 1947 to April 18th, 1955 over CBS and sponsored by various Colgate products, including Halo Shampoo. Originally starring Joseph Curtin and Alice Frost as Pam and Jerry North for most of the series, it concluded with Richard Denning and Barbara Britton, who carried the show to television. Frank Lovejoy initially played the North's friend, Lieutenant Bill Wigand, of Homicide. Scott Cotsworth and Francis DeSales also played Bill Wigand. Walter Kinsella was the ever-exasperated Sergeant Mullins. Betty Jane Tyler appeared as the North's 14-year-old niece. And Mandel Kramer was Mahatma McGlowan, a talkative cab driver. Tonight we will listen to The Letter from October the 6th, 1943.
Woodbury Cold Cream.
Lovely to look at, delightful to know, and heaven to kiss.
The makers of Woodbury Cold Cream, the beauty cream for the skin you love to touch, present The Adventures of Mr. and Mrs. North. Pam and Jerry knew Albie Baker couldn't have committed the murder, but there was all that evidence against him, and as his own lawyer said to the Norths one night in their apartment,
I don't like it. I'm his lawyer, and his story doesn't even sound good to me.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, but you must believe him. Albie'd never kill anyone, never.
What makes you so sure?
Why, Jerry and I have known him for years.
Well, I'm afraid that wouldn't convince a jury, Pamela.
Pam's right, though. Albie's no killer.
All you have to do is look at him, Mr. Hanson. He has one of the kindest faces I've ever seen. Oh, if only there was some way of finding that letter.
Yes, if. The letter is the only piece of evidence to support Baker's story. And nobody has ever seen it except Baker himself.
Al said he showed it to Krug.
But Krug denies it.
He's lying.
Well, it's Baker's word against Krug's. And with all the other evidence against Baker, I'm afraid the jury will believe Krug.
All right, Mr. Baker, just tell the court your story the way you told it to me. Now, you've told us that Private Detective Anderson questioned you about the stolen goods in your store.
Yes, sir. He asked me where I got the merchandise, and I said from Mr. Warren. But I didn't know where Warren got it.
What did the detective say to that?
He said he'd investigate Warren.
And then what happened?
Well, about a week later, I got a letter from Detective Anderson. He said he thought he had the goods on Warren, and asked me to invite Warren to my apartment. I was to introduce Anderson to Warren as a friend of mine. Well, then.
So, Mr. Baker, Detective Anderson wrote you a letter telling you that he wanted to meet Warren in your apartment, did he?
Yes, sir.
Where is that letter?
I don't know.
You don't know? I see. Did anyone besides yourself ever see that letter?
Yes. Yes, I showed it to Wilbur Krug.
Why?
Well, I wanted his advice. After Anderson was murdered in my apartment, I was in a jam. I thought Wilbur would help me. I showed him the letter and asked him what I should do.
What did he do with it?
I don't know. He must have destroyed it.
Did you see him destroy it?
No, sir.
You didn't see what he did with it?
No, sir, I did not.
Well, wasn't that a rather strange thing to do? To give someone such a vital piece of evidence and then not even notice what he did with it?
I was upset and confused. I hardly knew what was happening. Besides, I thought he was my friend. I didn't think of him.
Mr. Krug, did the defendant ever show you a letter to him from Frank Anderson, stating that Anderson was to meet Warren in the defendant's apartment?
No, he did not.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, This case is very simple. Stolen merchandise was found in the store of the defendant. This is a fact. A man investigating the stolen goods was murdered in the defendant's apartment. This is a fact. Against these facts, we have only the defendant's word and the letter he claims the dead man Anderson wrote him. Very well, where is that letter? Did anyone but the defendant ever see that letter? No. And why? For the very simple reason that there is no such letter. There never was such a letter. Frank Anderson didn't go to Baker's apartment to see Warren. He went there to see Baker. And it was Baker who killed him.
Gentlemen of the jury, have you reached a verdict?
We have, Your Honor. We find the defendant guilty as charged.
Jerry, I'm just sick. Think of it. Albie Baker convicted of murder.
Yeah.
Such a nice little fellow. If only there was something we could do. Oh, darling, I don't feel like seeing anyone.
Well, I'll go send whoever it is away.
Ah, Mr. North.
Oh, hello, Mr. Krug.
May I come in? I have something to tell you.
You mean you're ready to tell the truth about that letter?
More. I'm ready to produce it.
What?
Yes. Oh, don't think I've enjoyed playing the part I did. I despised myself. But I'm really a very weak character, and in my own way, I have to look out for myself. Every man for himself in this dog-eat-dog world, I always say.
Skunk would be more like it. But come on in if you really have something to offer.
Oh, thank you. Don't be too harsh in judging me. I'm prepared to undo the wrong I've done.
Good.
But for a price. Ah, Mrs. North, as lovely as ever, I see.
Darling, this worm has decided to take a turn for the better. He's going to let us have the letter.
Oh, good.
But as I mentioned before, for a price.
All right. What price?
Well, it depends.
On what?
On Cupid Warren.
What's he got to do with it?
Well, the letter, while clearing Albie, would convict Warren. Under the circumstances, he'd be willing to bid on the letter, too.
Do you mean you're going to give that horrible thug a chance to buy that letter? To practically buy Albie's life?
You know we can't match dollars with that gangster. He's big time, and I don't have that kind of money. As for Al, the poor fellow sank his last cent on the trial.
You have friends.
Well, I'll see what I can do.
Mr. Krug, you're... Oh, there are no words for you.
Well, after all, Mrs. North, I do have to eat, you know.
Why?
Everyone hates me. Well, it's to be expected. But do unto others and you wind up on the breadline, I always say. I'd much rather be comfortable and well-fed than popular. So, let's get down to business. Now, tomorrow you come to the address I'll give you. Naturally, you won't mention this to the police till the deal's off. I'll see to it that you're not followed. You'll go up one flight of stairs, knock on the door three times, and if everything is ready... Mr. and Mrs. North, I've been waiting. Come in. Mr. and Mrs. North, allow me to present Mr. Cupid Warren.
How are you?
Why are you locking the door?
So we won't be disturbed. Well, now let's get started, shall we? Come over to the table and sit down.
All right.
All right, Bright Eyes, where's that letter?
In time, Mr. Warren, in time.
I ain't got time, and I ain't bitten till I see what I'm bitten on.
Very well. Just a moment, and I'll get it.
North, if you and your missus are smart, you're going to keep your mouth shut when I start bidding.
Unfortunately, we're not very smart.
Well, don't say I didn't warn you. If you wake up in the morgue some morning, you'll know why.
All right, folks, here we are. The one and only genuine Frank Anderson letter to Albie Baker.
Let's see that.
Mr. Warren, mustn't touch.
Give me that letter.
Oh, a gun?
Yeah. Now hand over that letter.
Oh, thank you, Mr. North. You hit him with that chair just in time. And now I have the gun. I was very foolish. I should have seen to it that he was disarmed before he came in here.
Get up, Cupy. You're all right.
Oh, I'll get you for this, North.
Well, folks, shall we start the bidding?
Yes, let's get it over with.
Very well. What am I bid for this 100% foolproof perfect alibi for Albie Baker?
I'll give you a grand.
I beg your pardon.
You heard me.
A grand, he says. $1,000. Don't you realize your life hangs on this piece of paper, Mr. Warren? Is that all your life is worth to you, a measly $1,000?
His life isn't worth a measly 20 cents. I'll bid 2,000.
But, Mr. North, Albie Baker's life also depends on this paper. Is $2,000 all you bid for your very dear friend?
He was supposed to be your very dear friend, too, remember?
Come now, let's stop this fooling around. I want a real bid.
$5,000. And if you open your mouth, North, I'll push your face so far back through your head every time you want to blow your nose, you'll have to turn around.
10,000.
All right, wise guy, you'll get yours.
10,000, I'm bid. 10,000. Do I hear 15? Come, gentlemen, what are we waiting for?
15.
20.
Why, you?
Well, now, this is more like it. 20 is bid. Do I hear 30? 30, 30. Do I hear 30?
Jerry, where are we going to get $20,000?
I don't know.
25.
30.
Mister, you're just asking for trouble and don't think you won't get it. Now, I'll give you just one more chance. $40,000, Krug, and that's positively, absolutely my last bid. And North, if you and the little lady don't want to go swimming in the river with your feet in a bucket of seaweed...
Ignore him, Mr. North. I have 40,000. Will anyone make it 50? 50, do I hear 50? 40,000, then. It's going at 40,000. Going once?
It's Jerry, we can't let him get away with it.
I know, darling.
Going twice?
Okay, Krug. I'll make it 50.
All right, brother, if that's the way you want to play.
50,000, do I hear 60?
You don't hear nothing. Let him take it.
Okay. Sold to Mr. North for $50,000.
How long can I have to raise the money?
You don't have it with you?
Don't be funny.
Well, how about tomorrow noon?
Well, that's pretty fast.
I'm in a hurry. I want to get this over with.
Well, I'll do what I can.
All right. I'll call you tomorrow and make arrangements.
You better make arrangements for his funeral.
Golly, Jerry, how will we ever get that money? We're not millionaires.
We're not even 50,000 heirs.
Well, we'd better be before noon tomorrow if we want to get that letter. I wonder if it really is the letter.
And that's word for word what Albie told me was in the letter.
And we've just got to get that money. Can we, Jerry?
I doubt it.
But you bid.
What time, darling?
There must be some way we can... Jerry, look out, that car.
Quick, Pam, come here.
Oh, Jerry, you pulled me in at this doorway just in time.
Yeah, it seems Cupid's losing no time keeping his promise.
Jerry, car's stopping in the next block. It's turning around.
Oh, come on, I don't feel like playing target for that thug with a machine gun anymore.
Where are we going?
There's a taxi across the street. Oh, here we are. Quick, get in. Driver, start going. I don't care where, only make it fast.
Jerry, they're coming.
Hurry, driver.
Oh, golly.
They're still coming. Driver, turn again at the next corner. See if you can get away from that car that's following us. Good.
Oh.
Now, if you can shake them, you can name your own tip. But if you can't,
Let's not even think about that, Jerry. After all, I don't have a thing to wear to my funeral. Oh, I hope I never have to go through anything like that again.
No, it was a pretty bad 10 minutes, wasn't it? If our driver hadn't cut through that alley, we never would have shaken them.
Well, what do we do now, Jerry? We can't stay cooped up in this hotel room. Got to find some way to raise that money. Let's see. Do we know anybody with $50,000 to spare?
Do we know anybody with $50,000?
No. Oh, there must be some way to get our hands on some money. Either beg, borrow, or steal it. Of course, Jerry. Steal it.
Oh, now, Pamela, if you think I'm going to rob a bank...
Oh, no, no, Jerry. Not money. The letter.
What?
Why don't we steal the letter?
Oh.
Well, we could... We could just... I don't know. It does seem like a good idea.
We don't even know where he keeps it.
It was in the back room.
Yes, but you can be sure it's well concealed. He probably expects us to try just what you're suggesting.
Well, I know how we can find out where he keeps it, Jerry. You see, when he thinks the house is on fire, he'll go right to the
farm. Wait a minute. Why should he think the house is on fire?
Because of the smoke, silly.
What smoke?
From the bomb.
Bomb? Smoke? What the dickens are you talking about?
A scandal in Bohemia.
Oh, what?
Don't you ever read, Jerry? Nice book publisher. A Scandal in Bohemia is a story by Sherlock Holmes.
Oh.
You know, when Holmes wanted to find out where something was hidden, he had Watson set off a smoke bomb so that the woman who had hidden it would go and get it, and then he could get it.
Only he couldn't because she was very clever and, well...
That's all right, darling. I remember the story now.
Well, how about it then, Jerry?
Well...
We can go see Mr. Krug to ask for more time or something, and then we can set off a smoke bomb, and he'll think the house is on fire, and he'll run to get the...
All right, sweetheart, all right. You win. Let's go see what happens when smoke gets in his eyes. Now, you know just what to do, don't you, Ben?
Yes.
Good. Just watch for my signal.
Uh-huh.
Now, here's Krug's apartment. We've got to be ready to work fast.
Guys, I hope it goes all right.
Stupid!
Oh!
Yeah. You didn't expect to find me here, did you? But I thought me and the boys ought to drop over and pay Krug a visit. And now you come to the party, too. Well, that's just swell. Come in.
Well, I think we'd better... we were just leaving.
I said come in. That's right. Look, boys, we got company. Okay, Butch, lock the door.
Now, a brief intermission with a wartime beauty rule for the ladies.
These war days, we can't have all we'd like in the way of... Remember, good grooming can do more than fine clothes to make you lovely to look at. And there's a wonderful way to help your skin keep immaculately well-groomed. A way so quick and easy that it might have been made just for these busy days. You see, there's one cream that, all alone, does everything for skin beauty. It gives your skin complete beauty care, for it's a complete beauty cream. It's Woodbury Cold Cream. Just try it tonight and see. Dip into a jar of silky soft Woodbury Cold Cream and cover your face with it well. The rich cleansing oils loosen dirt and old makeup. So wipe off the soiled cream. Your skin will simply glow. It's so fresh, so clean. Now pat on more Woodbury and leave some on your skin overnight. That's all. You've given yourself the famous Woodbury Beauty Nightcap. It takes just 3 minutes, and tomorrow, when you see your clearer, smoother, more radiant complexion, you'll want to do that every night. Use Woodbury to cleanse your skin in the daytime, too. Your makeup will go on with a porcelain-perfect finish. 4 special softening and smoothing ingredients make Woodbury Cold Cream so beautifying. Another ingredient makes Woodbury exceptionally safe, for it works constantly purifying the cream in the jar in case blemish-causing germs get in. No other cream gives you this added protection. Try this complete beauty cream. Get Woodbury Cold Cream tonight.
And now back to Mr. and Mrs. North. In their attempt to get the letter that will clear Albie Baker, the Norths have gone to Krug's apartment, only to be greeted there by Cuby Warren.
You know, Mr. and Mrs. North, you just don't seem never to learn.
Should I give them a once-over lightly, boss, just so they get the idea you ain't fooling?
Not yet, Butch. You're not through with Krug.
Leave me alone, won't you?
Sure. As soon as you tell us where you got that letter.
I'll never tell you.
Okay, Butch.
Right, boss. Now, Krug, this is going to hurt you more than it does me.
No! Oh, brute!
That was nothing, Mrs. North. But you're just getting warmed up.
You going to talk, mister? Okay, how do you like this?
No! No! Stop it! Stop it. I'll tell you. I'll show you where the letter is.
Okay, Krug. Where is it?
I'll get it. It's behind this picture. There's a panel.
Jerry, he's getting the letter. What do we do?
Let's set off the smoke bomb. Maybe in the excitement.
Of course, Jerry.
Oh, no, you don't. I'll take that thing. Come on, hand it over. Come on.
Okay.
Jerry, we're licked.
Looks like it.
All right. Here's the letter.
Good. Bring it here, Butch.
Here you are, boss.
Ah. Huh. So I was supposed to top 50 grand for this, hey, Krug? Now I'll just take this cigarette lighter... And I'll light this corner of the letter.
And there goes the last piece of evidence against Cupid Warren up in smoke.
There it goes, Jerry.
Yeah. $50,000.
Albie's chance for freedom.
Well, that's that.
We failed, Jerry.
Yeah, we certainly did.
Is there any chance of doing anything for Albie now?
I'm afraid not. We can only hope. I'll go, dear.
Ah, hello there, North, old man.
Do you always have to be so blamed cheerful?
Ah, but I have good news for you.
Yeah? What?
I'm a liar, a frightful liar.
Is that good?
But of course. May I come in?
Okay. Well, darling, Krug crawled out from under his rock again. He says he has some good news for us.
Hello, hello, Mrs. North.
Hello.
My friends, do you still wish to purchase that letter?
What do you mean?
It would have been foolish of me to show the real letter, wouldn't it? When I was dealing with a man like Cupid Warren who might pull a gun at any moment. Yes, it would have been insanely foolish. And, Mr. and Mrs. North, I am not foolish. Weak? Yes. Selfish? Yes. But,
Do you mean that letter Krug burned was not the original?
Exactly, Mr. North. It was a copy.
And the original?
It's carefully put away where it shall remain until the money is made ready to change hands.
Oh, thank heavens. Jerry, there's still a chance.
Yes. Well, now, sir, do we do business or don't we?
We do.
Good.
But on different terms.
I beg your pardon.
You were able to force a high bid from Jerry before by the pressure of Cupid's bidding. But since you can't deal with Cupid anymore...
Why can't I deal with him?
Because you tricked him. So he'd never trust you again. He'd never know whether you were holding back a photographic copy or something. And the letter doesn't do him any good unless he's sure that he's destroyed every last copy of it.
That's right, Krug.
So it is. So it is. Distressing fact.
But we'll do business with you because we only have to worry about one copy, the original. But we'll have to make sure it is the original. And we won't pay you anything like $50,000.
What will you pay?
Oh, perhaps $1,000.
My dear man, you're joking. It wouldn't be worthwhile to bother.
You seem to forget, Mr. Krug, that if we don't buy that letter, it's worthless. You might just as well take what we offer. It's all clear profit.
And you seem to forget that if I don't take your offer, Albie Baker goes to the electric chair. I can sit tight and wait. I think you'll come across.
Oh, you're despicable.
I certainly am.
I hate you.
I hate myself.
You seem cheerful enough about it.
That, sir, is because I dislike myself so thoroughly, I enjoy hating me.
Oh.
The trouble with me is I should have been a poet instead of a blackmailer. I have the heart of a poet, the feelings of a poet, the soul of a poet.
Well, then why aren't you a poet?
Simple. My poetry stinks. Tell you what, North, let's settle this matter. $10,000. Take it or leave it.
Okay. It's a deal.
Jerry, do we just stand here on the corner until he shows up?
Uh-huh. Now that he's ready to show the original letter, he's being extra cautious. He's not telling us any address, afraid we might send the police there.
I only hope this time it is the original.
Well, I got some samples of Anderson's handwriting. We'll compare them with the letter. I'm not giving up $10,000 for any phony. I have too much trouble raising it.
How will we ever pay it back, Jerry?
It won't be easy.
Make it a dollar. That's easier. How many weeks are there in a year, Jerry?
52. Why?
I'm trying to figure out how much we could save if you give up smoking. Oh, I'm afraid it's not very much. It's too bad I don't smoke. Then I could give it up, too, and we'd save twice as much.
Oh, we'll manage somehow, Pam. But it won't be easy.
You know, Jerry, people shouldn't be allowed to blackmail anyone except very rich people.
I think that's Krug coming out.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. North. Get in, please.
Okay. Go ahead, Sam.
All right.
There we are. Now we'll just drive around for a while.
Oh, the OPA is not going to like that.
Ah, I have to make sure we're not being followed. Better to be cautious than sorry, I always say. And I'm satisfied no one is following. I'll take you to a room I've rented just for this little meeting.
Well, Mr. North, are you satisfied that that is the real letter?
Hmm. Yeah, it seems to be.
Good. Then, if you'll pay me, we can conclude our little negotiation.
Here you are.
Ah, thank you, thank you. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Mm-hmm. Yes, seems to be correct. Well, that's that then. I'll run along now, but just one more thing. You want to wait here for 5 minutes before leaving.
All right.
Well, goodbye, and please believe me when I tell you I'm heartily ashamed of myself. Goodbye.
Well, we've got it at last, Jimmy.
Yep.
Oh, I can hardly wait to tell Albie. Do they have telephones at Sing Sing?
Well, not private ones.
It'll be a wonderful surprise for him.
Miss Skippy Warren's in for a surprise, too.
Yes. Oh, how I'd like to see his face when he finds out that what he burns is only a copy and that we have the original.
Would you, sister?
Oh.
Well, take a good look.
Cupid.
Yeah, and this time I'm finishing the job. I've had trouble with you two for the last time.
What are you going to do?
What do you think I'm going to do? Nobody plays me for a sucker and gets away with it.
Oh, but it was Mr. Krug.
I'll take care of him later. Right now, I got business with you. I'll fix you so I don't have no more trouble with you.
Oh, wait a minute. Can't we...
No, I won't wait. I'm finishing you now, mister. Oh.
What happened, Jerry?
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. North.
Krug. I never thought I'd be glad to see you.
I saw QB coming down the hall, so I hid, and then I followed him back here.
You saved our lives.
Oh, I had to. I've entered this room, you see. If you were found dead in it, I'd be suspected, so I couldn't let him kill you. Not here.
How did he know we were here?
Well, I don't know. He must have had someone spying. How is he? Did I... Why doesn't he move? Oh, dear. I'm afraid I've killed him.
Looks like it.
I only meant to wound him. Oh, dear. Now his body will be found. I'm no better off than if he killed you.
Somehow I like it better this way.
But look, I was only trying to protect you. That's true, isn't it?
Yes.
You'll say that, won't you? You're the only witnesses, you know. You'll testify that he was trying to kill you, won't you? If you don't, they might make a first-degree case out of it. Please, don't let me down. After all, I saved your life.
Yes, you did.
So you will tell them what happened, won't you?
Sure, we will. Don't worry.
Thank you.
However, it's going to cost you just $10,000.
What?
Yes, otherwise we might have a sudden lapse of memory. Isn't that right, Pam?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Well, how about it?
Okay. You win. Here you are.
Good. Thanks.
Pammy, well, that's life. Nothing ventured, nothing gained, I always say. However, it is rather annoying to have ventured so far and still gained nothing. Well, it's no more than I deserve, I dare say.
It's a lot less than you deserve. You ought to be in jail. However, let well enough alone, I always say.
What's that?
Cupid.
What? But you said...
No, I didn't. You did.
Oh.
Your shot missed him completely, but it startled him just enough to give me a chance to clip him. He was standing between you and me, so you couldn't see it. No. Your gun won't help you. I have Cupid's gun now, and I'm ready to use it. Better put yours on the table. Go on.
All right. Ah, me. Seems I've played every card wrong, haven't I? Well, I suppose there's nothing left for me to do but go back to my portrait.
Well, Jerry, we have the letter, and it didn't cost us a thing. And we've caught Cupid. Everything's turned out for the best after all, hasn't it?
Not quite.
What do you mean, darling?
Think what we've done to love as a portrait.
One of the busiest bond sellers among the film stars is Dorothy L'Amour. And she's one of Hollywood's busiest filmmakers, too. You'll be seeing her soon in the new Paramount Technicolor picture, Riding High. Now, in spite of all that Dorothy L'Amour is doing, that luscious complexion of hers stays as fresh and clear as ever. For you see, Dorothy L'Amour is mighty smart. She's got her complexion care down to a matter of just a few minutes. And here's what she told us about it.
My every night skin care is the Woodbury Beauty Nightcap. I've never found anything else so helpful. It's all done with Woodbury Cold Cream in just 3 minutes.
And many more among Hollywood's loveliest stars have this same beauty care. Try it, girls. Woodbury Cold Cream gives such remarkable results because it's a complete beauty cream. Besides cleansing, it softens and smooths beautifully and does still more. Jars 10 cents to $1.25. That's Woodbury, W-O-O-D-B-U-R-Y, Woodbury Cold Cream. Get a jar tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, give to the National War Fund.
This fund helps many great works. It combines the appeals of 17 national relief organizations and your own money go for our boys in prison camps, to feed starving children abroad, and of course for relief work in your own community. The need is greater than ever. So give when the War Chest Drive is announced in your community. Give as you never gave before. Tune in again next week at this same time for another adventure of Mr. and Mrs. North, starring Alice Frost and Joseph Curtin. For thrills and laughs, be sure to listen, won't you? This is Ben Grauer saying goodnight for Woodbury Cold Cream.
Lovely to look at, delightful to know, and heaven to kiss. Da-da-da.
This program came to you from New York. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Well, that concludes my presentation for this evening. I hope you've all enjoyed it and enjoyed the rest of the evening. And we'll see you back here next time. Have a great evening, everyone.